Genesis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, depression. And before we get started, I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, and she wrote 24 volumes of literature. And the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show comes from the works of Alice Bailey, as does the following thought. Depression is like a thick fog which surrounds a person, making it impossible for him to see clearly. It is part of the great astral illusion, and to it all are prone. There seems to be an increase in depression these days, especially among young people. Is that true?
It certainly seems to be. We hear a lot about it, at least, and not only among young people. I think it seems to span all age groups and classes and so on. The last program we did was on cycles, and I think there's a relationship between cycles and dealing with depression. Even the Bible, I think it's Ecclesiastes, says, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. And if we understand that, it helps us cultivate the long-range view that nothing bad ever lasts. After you've lived long enough, you begin to realize, yes, that's true. Things have their cycles, and then they come to an end and are replaced by something new. But when you're a very young person, a child or a teenager, time has a much different quality to it and seems much more endless. The future seems so distant. And I wonder if perhaps the apparently rising cause of teenage suicide might be related to the lack of a sense of time and cycles to life that a young person has. I don't know. What do you think?
Yes, I think it could be something like that. Inability to see further, far enough into the future that will make it appear that everything is going to be all right, and no matter what.
All things must pass.
Yes, and I think there's probably a large thought form that's being built up or has been built up about teenage suicide, and so maybe it's so many of them are getting caught up in this unwillingly, perhaps at first. And
well, isn't that part of the great astral illusion that our opening thought mentioned?
Yes.
To it all are prone.
That's right, and not only teenagers, but adults and everybody is prone to this now. Whether they how we control this. Take control of ourselves and manage our way through these big thought forms. That's the real question.
We've talked about glamour on previous programs, and the great astral illusion is another term for the world glamour, the emotional fog, the miasma, as Alice Bailey refers to it, in which all of us live and have to learn to rise above. Rising above meaning becoming more centered in our mind and less focused in our emotional life. But depression, I think, for many, many people is a lifelong tug, like an ebb tide almost. that can draw one down and back in evolution if one gives into it. And if anything, I think it's increasing in its hold on people. It's a stage in human evolution, as I understand it, but it's also a stage in the evolution of humanity. And I notice in the work that we do, and I'm sure many of our listeners could verify this, that many people seem depressed today. And I wonder if it isn't sometimes actually a healthy sign, a kind of a warning to people that one's life has gotten off track. I mean, there is Alfred E. Newman, the character from Mad Magazine with that half smile on his face, and the slogan, "What me worry?" We don't want to be like him. He's happy, but I don't want to be that kind of happy that's kind of dense and asleep to life and the significance of the times. People are concerned. They're depressed, they're discouraged and confused about the direction of the national life, and they're questioning what seem to be the dominant moral and social values. And if you feel that society is going in a wrong direction, I suppose it's only normal to be depressed.
Yes, the point you made about it's an evolutionary trend, I think it's, and this comes out in the Bailey books, there is a, in a strange kind of way, it is a mark of advancement, all the rise of depression, perhaps, because it indicates that human consciousness is awakening. It's much more sensitive now, and perhaps that's why so many of the children are facing suicide or thinking about suicide, because there is this question about sensitivity to the spiritual impulses of the soul, for example, that the soul has its agenda to promote and manifest that which is good, and it tries to do this through its vehicle, the personality life in the world, and that impulse to work towards that which is good comes through, but it gets so twisted and so distorted in the lower life that it comes out in ways that are impossible for the person to handle it. And there may be some of that also behind all of this.
I wonder also if it isn't something that the more Western materialistic cultures aren't prone to. The Eastern view of life is that everything has a cycle and that all things must pass and that one must be prepared to let go of absolutely everything in life when God or the higher powers or karma decrees that it must be released. Even just this past week, I was reading about people suffering the aftermath of the tsunami. And it quoted one villager in Sri Lanka who had lost family members and was suffering, but said, we have to learn to let it go. We understand that. For a Westerner, that I think is very, very difficult. It's not part of our psychology. It's not part of our spiritual training. And so people are more rooted to the outer material plane of life. And when something goes wrong on that level, they get really badly shaken. There's also the fact that the whole impetus of American society is toward happiness as a right. Isn't it the Constitution that guarantees the right to the pursuit of happiness?
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was the pursuit of property.
Yeah. Well, was that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson's original draft guaranteed the right to pursue property, but it was revised for reasons I don't know to read the pursuit of happiness. Well, that compels every little American citizen to believe that one should and must be happy, and if one isn't, something's gone drastically wrong with one's place in society. But I don't think life does guarantee the right to happiness. I think it guarantees the right to learning, to evolution, to growth, which may not make one happy.
Right. Yeah, I think these, one can step back, and I know this is difficult to do if one's in a state of depression. Why, that's the last thing you want, you're able to do is to analyze what your situation is, but if one can manage to kind of step back and look at their life in terms of the whole and that bigger picture that you mentioned, the striving for happiness, for the striving for that which is good, and how we interpret good as being a very material good, you know, material things, a house and the car and the home in the country and all of that. And it just becomes a huge weight on a person when all of that drops away. And if you lose all of that, then it becomes it initiates a sense of failure and inferiority. And all of this acts like a big burden on one's shoulders and pushes one down.
But those very conditions of loss and change can also be the moment that leads to a spiritual reorientation. Mm-hmm. So oddly enough, a state of depression sometimes is what drives one into a more spiritual approach to life, because the known outer levels of life, family, career, home, friends, community, if those have failed to bring happiness, then sometimes one looks more inwardly. And so it can be productive.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think depression to me is like, it's like a depression in the land. You know, it's a dip in the land. And sometimes this occurs because the foundation underneath the land is unstable, so the land collapses. And if one's personal life begins to collapse, you know, why one loses a strong sense of foundation in their life, then their whole being tends to collapse, like a depression in the land. And it's, at least that's the way it seems to me.
Yes, you're referring to the biblical parable to not build one's house on sand. But mm-hmm. we all probably have passed that way or may do so again, and we've all chosen wrong goals and built shallow foundations without realizing it. I don't want to make people who are suffering from depression feel that they're bad or that they're failures. I think almost every one of us is acquainted to some extent with depression and may very well be fighting it in our own lives. I believe that every state we are in has its productive, positive element if you approach it properly. And depression, when the bottom has fallen out of the known world, is the very moment when we can pursue something new, and that can lead ultimately to something good.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, our topic for today, depression. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's an Alice Bailey book, the title of which is Serving Humanity. Serving Humanity is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. I like these compilations because what I do is I peruse them and I find out which topics I want to explore in greater depth in the more comprehensive books that follow those particular themes. And all the chapters are abridged, summarized, and it's a wonderful way to more or less form a priority, a list of the larger books that deal specifically with those particular topics. This way you can approach it from a point of view of your own interest in which topics you want to look at first. And the special offer is in the form of free shipping and handling. So all you have to do is write a check or a money order, $16, send it to Lucis Publishing. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, that's a check for $16. Ask for the book, Serving Humanity, and send a check or money order to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And please mention that you heard about the offer on Inner Sight. We appreciate the support, by the way, that you've given us in the past. That's what helps us to pay for these radio stations. We would also appreciate your continued support. So if you'd like to make a donation, we'd certainly appreciate it. It really will help us do these shows for you. Send your donation to, by the way, they're tax-deductible donations. Send them to Lucis Trust, Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, if you want to make contact with us, or come to our monthly meditation meetings, you can certainly give us a call, and we'd be happy to answer your questions. Give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. That's 1-866. Think of New York LUCIS. Our website, www.lucistrust.org. And if you key into the website, you can find out a lot of information about LUCIS Trust. And you can also key into our archived library of radio shows. And by the way, WOR also keeps a website. You can hear the current shows if you wake up late one morning and miss it. WOR will hold on to the show for about a week and a half. www.wor710.com. And I was thinking two things that were of major interest to me as you and Dale were speaking about the subject of depression. First of all, I get the idea that depression to teenagers, and maybe to some adults too, is a kind of a permanent solution to what they have to realize is a very temporary problem, which I think is a good thought as far as helping people.
Suicide, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, depression, if it's deep enough, I guess, can lead to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I also thought of the idea that I've never heard it presented like that, that depression can also be almost like a form of therapy as a catalyst to move us into a better path in life. Is that accurate, those two comments?
Yes, because depression results from friction, from a conflict of forces within the personal nature. The inability to be at peace with life results in depression, and that inability to be at peace and to accept one's present state might be actually a very healthy recognition of the fact that it's time to move forward. The personality is bent on comfort, on satisfaction of its physical and emotional desires, on pleasure. But the soul is interested in service to the whole, because the soul is identified utterly and completely with the whole. It's not oriented toward the separated consciousness of the personality who thinks he exists apart from the world, within the world, but separate from it. So that as the evolution of the consciousness develops, there becomes more and more of a friction between the soul that we all are and our lives-long habit of indulging the separated interests of the personality. And this disquiet is what drives people into a state of depression, because they're not living as the soul wants them to live. There's a lack of integration of higher and lower self. Dale mentioned a few moments ago the fact that depression is actually an indication of the good, in the sense of the good, the beautiful, and the true as general principles of spiritual reality. Depression can be an expression of the good in the sense that the inpouring light of the soul illumines that which isn't good.
Yes, and the individual, the personality, sees, he feels the impulse of the soul impulsing this sense of driving him towards the good, and it's how he interprets the good and that causes the problem, because he may see the good as being a new house in the country and you know, cars and all the material good that he can imagine, or it may be a new position or whatever, but it's an illusionary kind of good, and that he never, the problem arises when he finds it inability to measure up to that good that he envisions.
Yeah, the effect of the light is that it illumines that which is not of the soul. And it seems that the good of the soul light illumines everything that is not yet of that same quality and level of expression. And it results in a kind of inferiority complex. The inpouring light causes one to look at oneself as a personality, as an individual, and to sort of say, ew, I don't like what I see. And many spiritual people respond to this growing realization of how much work there is to be done by falling into depression. St. Paul in the Bible said it perfectly. He said, "That which I would do, I do not. And what I would that I not do, that I do." And for a certain stage of the path, there is this struggle between the good and the present reality.
And it can affect everybody and anybody, because as we said in the beginning, even the greatest among us, I'm thinking of, you know, the classic case of Abraham Lincoln, for example. He went through terrible periods of depression and melancholy. And in fact, particularly in his earlier years, when he was courting his friend Anne Rutledge, and she suddenly died, and he went into a period of deep depression for a year or so. And then later on, he was courting Mary Todd, who eventually became his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln. But suddenly he broke off that engagement, and he was hit by another bout of depression. And I think but he came through. He had the strength and the wisdom. And you see, this being such a great spiritual being and initiate in a way, that he was so subject to the soul impulses that it gave him enough strength to see it through and persist. And it was that persistence that gave him the strength, I think, to see him through the dark days of the Civil War.
And the fact that he was able to focus on the greater need of the whole, or certainly of American society. He didn't allow himself to be swept into the vortex of isolation that depression can cause, where you become so alienated by your very state of unhappiness and depression that you can't connect or relate to others. He had to, as president, and I think his consciousness as a spiritual person was high enough that he could place his own misery within the context of the much greater and more urgent suffering and crisis that the whole country was going through. So I think that's one perspective that can help all of us to put our personal state and our personal problems in the context of humanity. And we realize then that we're not alone, and that some people cope with far greater problems. It helps to give a more correct perspective.
I think that's probably the key to any kind of depressed situation, because what happens in the depression? One begins to turn in upon themselves, and it's that total self-focus that really pulls everything down in that direction. Energy follows thought, and if all your thought is on yourself and your misery, then everything around you is going to be pouring in. All the energies and forces are pouring in upon you and focalizing at that point of your little self. And to rise above that and to look beyond yourself, perhaps, is a way of salvation.
Energy follows thought, right, and one can use that principle to cultivate the opposite of depression, which is joy. You may not have many reasons to think life is happy on the outer level, but even in the midst of real sorrow, there can be a sense of a quiet joy that is the voice of the soul that knows life endures, that there is no real death, there is no real separation from loved ones. And that joy can be cultivated by realizing that the soul is the God within, and by the realization that time brings all things to an end, and by a forgetfulness of the self that says, "I am one with humanity and I am not alone." In fact, there are some rules from the Ageless Wisdom for overcoming depression. They begin with the realization that we must know thyself to be the undying one. We are the soul. We persist. and to control the mind, because through the mind, the emotional problems can be overcome. Jung, the psychiatrist, said that no problem can be solved on its own level. It has to be solved from a higher level, and that is the mind that overcomes the depression. And we have to learn that the form is just a veil that hides divinity. It isn't divinity itself. So loss on the outer levels doesn't mean the end of life. What are some other guidelines for overcoming depression?
Well, basically it's looking out beyond yourself, I think. It's that decentralization of the self and being able to let go of what you... your illusions, you know, this illusionary world and astral world that you built up around yourself. And now this is not easy to say. I mean, it's easy to say, but not easy to do. So it's it takes just starting and making the effort.
And it does contribute to mental health. You're right, because I remember a study of very old people who lived well past 100, and one of the identifying characteristics of these people was that they loved life in spite of having endured real crises and losses, because they could accept loss. They were resilient. And I think that resiliency, that plasticity on the emotional level, is so important that we work against any tendency to rigidity and crystallization in our demands that we place on life and on our relationships and our loved ones. If we can, I suppose using the cliche, go with the flow more and welcome change and know that every loss brings another opening door, perhaps we can overcome the tendency to rigidity and to the inevitable crystallization that sets in with life after so many years. And finally, by cultivating a capacity to love everyone, including ourselves, we can fight depression.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucy's Publishing. And that's the Alice Bailey book, Serving Humanity. I think you'll like that. It's a compilation of extracts from all 24 of the books, and all the different topics are summarized, and it'll help you to get a priority list, create a priority list for yourself of which topics you perhaps want to explore in greater depth in the more comprehensive books. The special offer comes in the form of a discount in the form of free shipping and handling, so that all you're paying is $16. So you send a check or money order to Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, that's a check or money order for $16 to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called The Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.